Well, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming out on a rather miserable evening to hear me. Some of you, I'm sure, have been before to, if you can call them that, lectures of mine. I don't profess myself to be a lecturer, I'm just a talker. Some people say there's not very much difference. But nevertheless, I want, if I can, to particularly help those who are on the fringe of the subject. That doesn't mean to say that I ignore the rest of you who obviously know a great deal about the subject and have been in the movement probably for a number of years, but I always feel that the most important thing is to consider the beginners, the people who are seeking, the people who are, as it were, beginning to wonder what it's all about. Is there anything in this business of spiritualism? Is it possible to communicate with the dead? Do the dead really exist in another world? And is it feasible, is it possible that they can, at times, make contact with us in this material world? And I particularly am interested, obviously, in those who feel that they need something concrete. Those of you who studied this subject won't have to be told the obvious, and that is that in spiritualism, unfortunately, there is a lot of drivel, there is a lot of nonsense talked, often by people who should know better. I can only say this from personal experience as a medium, that the evidence, and I mean evidence, I don't mean something that could be or it might be or well, yes. I'm talking about the reality, the absolute certainty of evidence. Communication between the so-called living and the dead. This definitely does happen. But it doesn't necessarily mean to say that it happens all the time and that all mediums are able to make that sort of contact where you receive irrefutable proof that cannot be gainsaid, cannot be talked away, or cannot be explained away by telepathy or whatever you like to put it down to. I have brought tonight with me some recordings taken at cities. Now, I do not necessarily expect, in fact, it would be very wrong of me to expect you to accept just on face value something that you hear on a tape recording. But I can only say this, that these recordings of these voices were taken on different occasions, and they were not in any way rehearsed, they were spontaneous, they were not planned, they were not organized, we just sat and it happened. But that doesn't alter the fact that often when I sit, nothing happens at all. And this, I would suggest, happens very often. Mediumship is not on tap. There are people who say it's wrong to call up the dead. This, of course, is so stupid. No medium can call up the dead. No person, no matter how much they may long to communicate with some soul they have known and loved, and in the hope that they can make a contact, can call up the dead. I would suggest, and I think it's true to say, that at least a third of my sittings are complete and absolute and utter failure. All I can do as a medium is sit. And all I can ask of the people who come to me is to sit with an open mind. I don't ask them to be gullible. I don't ask them to accept everything as gospel. I don't ask them to leave their brains outside the sounds room door. All I ask when anyone comes to me for sitting is that they will be at least open-minded, trying to realize if they can the difficulties. And there are many, many complexities and many, many difficulties in communication. We do not really know very much about communication. There are people who will, in fact I understand there are people, who will lecture for an hour about communication, how it happens, how it takes place, etc. Well, I'm not going to argue with these people, but in my opinion, very little is really known about the complexities of communication. As those of you who've read, I presume some of you have, the Sunday Express articles by a man of repute who approached my work in a purely scientific way and subjected me with others of like mind to serious tests using all modern equipment that they could devise or think of or bring into use, and still we are left with the obvious fact that communication, even under the most stringent test conditions, does take place. Doesn't alter the fact that we are still puzzled. I don't know all the answers. I wish I did, but of course that's probably as well as I can. All I know is that under certain conditions, at certain times, individuals, so-called dead people, do communicate. And sometimes they give evidence of such a nature that really one would have to be so skeptical, so absolutely illogical in one's approach to refute it. But of course there are people who do refute. Even the man who tested me under these conditions, and in spite of the evidence which he quite frankly acknowledges to be impossible to fake, is still not 100% convinced. But that doesn't really matter. What I'm trying to say is that if people come into this movement seeking sincerely and diligently and honestly and realize the complexities of this whole subject, especially mediumship and the technicalities associated with it, if they go about it in an honest way, I am convinced that the vast majority at least will come to one conclusion, that there are no dead, that there are people whom we have known and loved, who take an interest in us, who love us still, and are endeavouring and at times do succeed in contacting us. And they give their evidence in their own way. And another thing about what is evidence of survival is not necessarily always what you anticipate or what you may hope for. I suppose it's human and natural that if a mother goes to a seance with a medium and who has lost her only son, that she has, to some extent, some preconceived idea or ideas as to what she would accept as evidence. This is human and this is natural, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the best evidence is that which you anticipate. In fact, the best evidence is that which you, at the time of receiving it, cannot perhaps even verify or accept or acknowledge. But afterwards, in discussion perhaps with some member of the family or some friends or the son in question, the person or persons involved says, well, of course, I remember that, so, that's absolutely so. Well, the mother responds, well, I didn't even know anything about it. This, in my opinion, is much better evidence than the obvious. So many people say within themselves, well, if my son comes and says so-and-so, I shall know that that is my son. All right, if it is sufficiently evidential for that person, so well and so good. That person is helped and that person is comforted. But, in my opinion, and I have spent 40-odd years in this work, and I have listened to thousands of communications, in my opinion, the best evidence is not necessarily the obvious, not necessarily that which at the time you accept, or that which you feel appeals to you or is acceptable to you. In other words, what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way perhaps is that when you sit with a medium, even though you may say, oh well, I don't understand that, or perhaps you're of the nature where you say, yes, well, maybe, or whatever. In other words, of course it's a very, very good thing to keep notes. And better still in the modern age such as this, to use a tape recorder. Because by using a tape recorder with a medium, you have there, verbatim, word for word, everything that has been said. And you will find often, when you play it back to yourself, or perhaps to friends or members of the family, that on that recording are certain statements, which at the time you thought were not acceptable, or you thought they were even ridiculous, and you find that they were correct. There are many aspects to this whole subject, so many, and in a sense, two, many confusions. Those of you who have been in the movement for many years will be the first, I think, to admit that there are so many aspects of the subject which cause, at times, doubts and apprehension. And I think this is very justifiable. I don't think that we should go through this movement with our eyes shut. I'm not suggesting that people do, but I certainly think that there are many people in this movement who accept willy-nilly anything that is just given to them, just because the medium has said her guide says this or her guide says that. I could go into a lot of detail about guides, but this would take up a whole evening. I do not deny, obviously, the reality and the existence of spiritual beings on the other side, whom we term as guides, who come to us to help us, to guide us, to uplift us, to inspire us, to encourage us. But at the same time, it doesn't mean to say that they're necessarily infallible. And there are people, I regret to say, who become rather caught up, perhaps, with a particular medium. And everything that particular guide says is gospel truth. And indeed, I have known people who have been so swayed by what has been termed guidance through a certain medium that really, quite frankly, does not help them very much. It's done them a great deal of harm. I want everyone who's deeply, sincerely involved in this subject to realize that they have a responsibility to themselves. They have a responsibility for this movement to present it in a way in which it can be acceptable to the rest of humanity. I've always said this, but certainly latter years I've said it over and over again. The harm done to spiritualism is from within its gates, not outside. There is so much nonsense talked in spiritualism by people who should know better, who profess to be sincerely involved and interested, who often themselves are mediums of a kind. And they're sincere enough, no one denies the sincerity, but I feel that this movement is not going on the right path. Now, these are my own personal opinions. Some people might, and quite rightly, they have entitled an opinion, will disagree with me. But I think that mediumship, before you can accept it, and before you can follow it, no matter who the medium may be, you must be absolutely certain and sure within yourself that this mediumship is genuine, that it is straightforward, that it is honest, that which you are receiving is coming from the other side of life. Because I can assure you, a great deal that comes or purports to come from the other side of life has got nothing to do with spirits at all. It's very difficult, very often, for a well-meaning person, sincere and open and frank and honest, to always know when they are mental mediums how much may be coming from the other side, or how much may be coming from their subconscious mind, or how much they may be picking up by telepathic means. A lot of people in the movement don't like this sort of discussion, don't like this sort of talk. But until spiritualists can face the truth of this whole complex subject, until we can say to ourselves, well, we have got to find the reality, we've got to discard all the trappings, we've got to discard all the things which really in themselves have no real bearing or meaning, no real purpose in that within which we are trying to do and achieve. I would not like anyone to think that in any way I am endeavouring to discredit another instrument or another medium. That is not so. But I do feel that this movement, if it is going to progress, if it is going to affect the whole world, if it is going to bring conviction, if it is going to bring the comfort and the reality of the power of the Spirit to this world, we have got to look into ourselves, we have got to be very analytical, we have got to be highly critical, We've not got to accept everything on face value because we are told by this or that person that it is coming from the other side. We have every right to test the spirits. In the Bible, we are told to test the spirits and see if they be of God. Well, I know that we can test the spirits and prove survival. I know that we can receive evidence of such a nature that no one who is reasonably intelligent and frank and open and honest could refute it. But we've got to get rid of the mumbo jumbo, we've got to get rid of a lot of nonsense that goes on, and we've certainly got to try and present this subject so that we shall retain the people that come into this movement. And let us face the obvious fact that hundreds of people every year are attracted to this subject. They are seeking. They are seeking evidence of survival, they are seeking comfort, and they are seeking, without perhaps even realizing, something much more valuable, something which applies to every human being, and that is the reality and the power of the Holy Spirit, which animates all of us, irrespective of class, color, or creed. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that it is a well-known fact that many people drift out of spiritualism in disgust, in disillusionment. And one should turn round and say to oneself, why? Well, there are many answers to this. And perhaps what I'm saying tonight is not what you perhaps really anticipated or have come here to listen to me anticipate my talk perhaps on an entirely different level. But I have now reached the age of 61. I have been in spiritualism since I was 15. I have been a professional medium for roughly 40 years. I have demonstrated my gifts to thousands and thousands and thousands of people in all walks of life, of all nationalities. I have listened to evidence which has been so, even to me, after being so used to it, is so fantastic and so amazing and so uplifting and so, at times, so inspiring. And it's because I feel the intensity of these things that I am very deeply, deeply concerned with spiritualism today. I know it's not considered a thing to make comparisons. I know at 61 people say, oh well, it's nostalgia, you're looking back into the past. Well, I look at the present age, present day in which we live, and for instance, this particular association has been in existence for roughly 100 years. No one denies, I'd be the last person to deny, that it has done tremendous good. It has helped thousands of people, comforted thousands, saved many from suicide, healed many people, and impressed and inspired others to work for the reality of which I speak. But it doesn't alter the fact, in my opinion, that we have not achieved anything like what we should have done in 100 years. We have had 2 world wars. We see the troubles in Ireland. We see Vietnam. We see so many ghastly things that are happening in the world. All right, we can hardly anticipate that a few thousand spiritualists here or there can probably make all that much difference. And yet, if we have this power of the spirit within us, and we realize its potency, and what can be done with it, and by it, and through it, if we realize that we as instruments have this wonderful gift of communication, where great entities, great souls from the other side can reach us, and inspire us, and then I feel that we should have done much more than we have done. I know, as I said earlier, that there are many sincere people who are working in this movement. I know of many of them, and I admire them very much. But I cannot help but feel that the impact that we should have made on the world is very insignificant. People tell me, who should know, that never at any time in its history has spiritualism been more respected, more regarded, more talked about, more publicized. Constantly articles in newspapers, appearances on television, which are often a disgrace anyway, and do more harm than good, because they're not only badly presented, but they are exactly what people outside spiritualism think we're all like, a lot of idiots. The point is that where are we going and what are we trying to do about it? Are we just content to go to a medium from time to time or to a meeting and listen and receive a message from Bert or Charlie or Fred or Harry? I'm all right, darling. Are you all right? Yes, I'm all right, thank you. Or what should I do about the shop? Do you think I should sell it? Or, do you think my husband's faithful to me? I don't have to tell you the obvious. It goes on all the time. Instead of dedicated people being anxious not only just to prove survival and the reality of a life to come, but to do something, to be active, to be anxious to serve, to spread this truth, this knowledge, to uplift humanity, not just merely to comfort temporarily, not just to get a message, or if you're in a quandary, expect the other side to come and solve your material problem. When I went to America, which I thought, in my innocence, was the home of great mediumship, in spite of the fact that I was entertained by people who I have great regard and respect for, mind you, and who are members of the American SPR, or the equivalent of the English SPR, who approach the subject on a very intelligent basis, I was amazed to find that practically everywhere I went, the only thing that really interested the vast majority of people was to have the fortune told. Now, if spiritualism is going to be a matter of telling people's fortune, and it goes on here, just as much in America, let me tell you this, under the guise of spiritualism, this is no good to anybody. If you want that kind of thing, go to Brighton on the Pier for £5 and see Madame McCarthy. I'm concerned with the deep involvement of this great truth. I have listened to souls from the other side talking in a very intimate, personal way to their loved ones on earth. But behind all this, no matter how beautiful it may be, how comforting it may be, is the insistent desire of the spirit that every human being in this world should realize the true implication of what is happening. We have got something that is so wonderful, but we abuse it, we misuse it, we do not aspire on the level of consciousness which we should to reach out to the heights that those of a greater awareness and consciousness and being, that they can reach us and come to us and help us and uplift us and inspire us to do great things. Here and there it may happen, I don't deny that. But talking about mediumship, time out of time, people ask me this question about developing mediumship, how they should go about it, what they should do. And often I've heard people at my sittings, where perhaps they've been in touch with some soul or other, occasionally a guide or inspirer, or if you like, a guardian angel, as the Bible puts it. And they have been told that they should sit and they should develop. Well, there are no shortcuts. Believe me, there are no shortcuts to good mediumship. If you want to be a medium, that is, if you have the fundamental power within you, and I believe sincerely that everybody has, I believe that we are spiritual beings while yet encased in flesh. If we accept the fact that we have physical attributes, physical powers, physical abilities which can be dormant, latent, which can be drawn out of us, developed and so on, so obviously can our spiritual faculties. And there is no reason why every human being should not be able to demonstrate the power of the Spirit in some shape or form. But there is no shortcut to success. When people ask me about this, I say, well, the obvious answer to that one is, if you can, try to find people of like mind who are equally sincere as yourself, who are prepared to give up time and to sit regularly, weekly, at least once a week, indefinitely, giving yourself completely and absolutely in service, and not anticipating too much too soon, because it won't happen too soon. It will take time. The guides will experiment with you, they will find out what they can best do with you, what you are best capable of doing at a later date when they have to some extent developed you. They may do things which may even surprise you. But the point is this, that you have got to sit in complete harmony, in love. And if one person in that circle develops some gift, or shows some sign of developing some gift, then it should be a mutual joy. But what do we find? Unfortunately, being human beings, sometimes it happens, and I hear this over and over again, circles break up. Mrs. So-and-so's a little bit frowned off of Mrs. So-and-so, and why should she get this and why shouldn't I, and etc., etc., the human element. This is human. But one has got to sink oneself if you want to become an instrument, and forget yourself. Indeed, I go as far as to say, and in fact it was given to me from the other side, that the only way that one can evolve or become an instrument or serve is to forget yourself. And until you forget yourself, you will not find your true self. And I think this is a great truth. There is no shortcut. There's no way in which you can ever hope to become an instrument unless you are prepared to sit in a dedicated way, in a harmonious way, with people of like mind. I don't even think it's necessary myself to have an experienced medium in charge. In fact, my experience has taught me that it is much more likely that you'll develop genuine mediumship without a so-called professional medium in charge. And I have very good reasons for saying that, but I won't go into the detail of them. In fact, you might find that you'll end up being an ersatz, very poor reproduction of what was originally or probably already a tatty medium. And I mean that. Give me a home circle of sincere, honest, dedicated people who sit in love and in harmony together. And in that group, you will find the power of the Spirit will come. You don't need a professional medium who may mislead you. And believe me, many a so-called professional medium misled many a good medium. They put ideas into their head. They have given them impressions which never existed in reality and in the pigment of their own imagination, because they have to uphold their particular position. They have to make some impression. They have to give the impression that at least they're doing something. And personally, this is personal, though people who object to this, but I maintain that the only way, in my opinion, the best way, is when you sit harmoniously with people you know, you trust, you love. No one has any axe to grind. You're sitting there for the common good, in harmony together. You don't need the professional medium. Because you will get the results, you will get the phenomena, you will get the guidance. Like will attract like, wherever you sit, whoever you may be. And if you sit in a frivolous, stupid way, then obviously you will attract frivolous and rather stupid people. And they will take you for a ride. But I have seen good mediums ruined by so-called professional mediums. I have actually sat in a circle, a developing so-called circle, many, many years ago. And quite a well-known professional medium was taking this circle. And there was a little soul sitting over there, obviously going into a trance state, losing herself completely. She should have been left severely alone. What did the stupid medium do? Get up from her chair, get hold of the hand. It's a terrible shock to this poor subject, let me tell you. Come along, friend, come along. Get on your feet. You're all right. A lot of... I would just say, which word? You must forgive me. I'm a very intense person. I love mediumship. I love the reality of the power of the Spirit. I know what it's all about. I know its faults. I know the stupidities that go on and how people are misled, misguided, how they're put on the wrong path by often so-called mediums who ought to know better, or perhaps they don't. Perhaps that's the point. They don't know better. They can't differentiate what comes from one side or what comes from this, or the other side or what comes from this. You see, there are dangers. And there are people who say, oh, physical mediumship's on the way out. And healing's taken its place, or mental mediumship's taken its place. Well, this may be true, but it's a very, very sad, sad thing. Because the history of spiritualism, the great scientific minds, came to their conclusions of the reality of a life to come through physical mediumship. Crookes, Lodge, Flammarion, all these great men of science, they had to have something tangible. They had to have something that they could feel, that they could touch, something that was concrete, not something airy-fairy. And this is the sad fact that, as far as I know, and maybe others, certainly in a professional sense, there are no voice mediums in this country or in Europe, by myself. I don't say this in any form of pride, because I mean I'm just an instrument. I've been very fortunate. I have developed a wonderful gift. I say I have developed it. The other side have developed it. Nobody else did. I've just been the instrument. But I think it's a terrible, sad, terribly sad thing that there are no physical mediums, as far as I know, to follow me. There may be people who are sitting quietly in their homes who are getting results. Nobody knows anything about it. But unless we have first-class mediumship that can be tested scientifically, that can have an effect, that will produce results, I do not myself think that the world is going to be convinced by mental mediumship. There will be lots of people who will receive help and comfort and who, for them, will be convinced of survival. But if we are to really make some real progress in this movement, we do need dedicated mediumship of a kind which can be analysed, dissected, tested, and so on. And any medium that is not prepared to offer himself to scientific research and tests, well, in my opinion, shouldn't be practicing. Because if you've got something that is real, you've got nothing to cover up, you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. And even assuming that as a medium, because mediums are very sensitive, highly strung, emotional people, and the conditions under which sometimes one is tested, under scientific conditions that is, are not necessarily always of the kind which makes results successful. Let's face it, the very conditions under which I've sat at times, under scientific condition and test, have not always been very helpful to the phenomenon. But nevertheless, even if you fail sometimes, that doesn't matter. There's no disgrace in failure. But there is disgrace, in my opinion, when a medium refuses to allow himself to be tested. Then you have every right to be highly suspicious. And I don't necessarily mean that they should just be tested by friends or people who have already become convinced of the particular type of mediumship. I'm talking about being tested by independent people who are not spiritualists, who are prepared to give up their time and also use equipment which they may have to hire at an expense, etc., to do this. I think that we should give ourselves, if we are sincere, we should give ourselves to this willingly. Of course, I'm not suggesting that a medium such as myself can always be under test conditions. That would be completely ridiculous. And if one were to accept every challenge, if I can use such a word, from every source, or I mean, I've had people who've written to me And really, quite frankly, they've suggested this or suggested that. I was even, I can't remember the exact amount of money, but some very learned, I presume he's learned, his letter was well typed and written, he spelt well, he was a colonel, suggested that I offered myself to some group, I can't even remember what it was, that if I came through successfully, I think it was £100,000. Well, the mere fact of offering £100,000 made me think, well, I should never win that anyway, because they'd never even had that much to spend in the first place, and if they had it, they wouldn't let you have it. Because, quite frankly, I mean, I really mean this, some of these so-called researchers, well, they're not exactly the most straightforward and honest of people. But that's another story. I don't want to go into all that. Now, I brought some tape recordings. Now, I offer these to you with sincerity, because I think they will interest you. I don't know whether I should play all of it, because it does run quite a while, and I like to leave some time for answering of people's questions. And I always find that myself the most stimulating part of the program. But I brought this along because I think you'll find it interesting. And so much has been said over the years about my interest in Valentino, the great silent film actor. I thought it might be interesting for you to hear his voice. Now, unfortunately, during his earthly lifetime, which was before electrical recordings, let me add, he never made any gramophone record. He did make a gramophone record of himself for fun, like we do at times, or have done. He made a recording of himself singing the Kashmiri song from the Indian dubstep, and on the other side a Spanish piece of music called El Relicario. But of course that doesn't give you any idea what his speaking voice is like. But as a point of interest, not that it will, I don't offer this as evidence, but when I was in Hollywood this year, the beginning of this year, I had the good pleasure and joy to meet his brother Alberto, who is now 80. And I was so struck, although the man is so much older, I mean, Valentino was only 31 when he died, and Alberto is now in his 80th year, I was so struck by the similarity. It's easy for me to say this, I don't know if this is evidence, but I was so struck by the similarity in Alberto's voice, Valentino's brother's voice, and the recording, except in the Valentino voice is so much younger. So you'll hear, first of all, Mickey, and this was taken, this particular beginning of the sitting was taken just on the spur of the moment. It was not on a prearranged thing, it wasn't an organised sitting, it was just that, well, we felt we'd sit and see what happened, and with Mickey comes and Valentino speaks. And then after that, you'll hear the voice of Emma Harding Britton, who was one of the great founders of spiritualism. And after that, a short extract of Oscar Wilde. And for a point of interest, we did play, this recording of Oscar, this is only a snatching of it, this recording of Oscar Wilde was played to his son before he died. But unfortunately, he said that, of course, he only remembered his father when he was a little boy because of the unhappy state of affairs of Oscar Wilde and prison sentence. His mother wouldn't allow him to see his father. But he found it very interesting, and he thought, he didn't say, I'm not saying he said it was his father, but he did imply that it could well be. And then you'll hear, if there's time for all this, there's such a lot on this, a conversation between a Dr. Nanji from Sweden and his wife. Dr. Nanji comes over from Sweden and sits with me from time to time, and he has had the most extraordinary evidence and conversation with his wife. And then there's a little bit at the end of Mickey. But I don't honestly think we'd have that much time to play all this. So we just play some of it anyway. And then I'll throw the meeting open to questions. So if you want to have a go at me, I'm only too glad to have a go at you.
Yes, he's got a new suit on tonight.
Oh,
can you see him?
Yeah. What's this an idol?
Nothing, we just changed it. I just thought I'd have a change.
Is that all you're going to say tonight?
I don't know yet.
Oh.
touch with anybody besides you, sir? Who is your mind?
Yeah.